is on the air. This is your Hollywood radio reporter, coming to you from the Little Theater at the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. One of these days, someone will write a history of motion pictures. It's going to be an exciting story of dreams and ambitions, of hard work and faith, of disappointments and overnight triumphs. It will be a story of unusual people. And away up top in importance, you'll read about a young lady who is here now. You'll meet her in a moment. But first, I want to tell you something about her. She made her first appearance in 1928. She was born that year, on April 23rd. For her, the years of obscurity were few. In 1932, she made her motion picture debut. You liked her. In fact, you raved about her. By 1934, she had become motion picture's number one attraction. You and your next-door neighbor were completely captivated when you saw her as Little Miss Marker. Before the year was over, you had gone back to your favorite theater to see Stand Up and Cheer, Baby Take a Bow, Bright Eyes. That same year, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences bestowed upon her a special award for her outstanding contribution to the screen. She has appeared in 20 hit pictures since then. Pictures like Little Colonel, Captain January, The Littlest Rebel, and The Little Princess. You've laughed with her, yes, and you've cried with her, too. You'll remember her best as a chubby, curly head. Well, you should see her today. Quite tall, poised, still smiling. Here she is now. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Shirley Temple.
You can say the nicest things, Mr. Whitbeck. And make them sound awfully exciting. And I wouldn't want to let you down. But I don't know what to talk about.
Well, suppose we start by explaining that you're almost a grown-up young lady with grown-up ideas.
Well, it doesn't seem very important. I'd rather talk about making movies.
A born trooper. Well, then, how does it feel to be back in pictures?
Why do you say back in pictures? I don't feel that I've ever been away. I'm a little too young to be staging a comeback. Don't you see how funny that sounds?
I'd never thought of it in just that way. Let me correct myself. Shirley Temple has been away on a vacation. How's that?
The truth is, I've taken a year off to begin my high school studies. Don't you think the freshman year is one of the hardest times in a person's life?
You're asking me? Now, Shirley, it's been a long time since, and I'm not... What is this? I'm supposed to be asking the questions.
I know, but you always ask the questions. Everybody expects it. So let's be unexpected. It's a lot more fun. You pretend that you're Shirley Temple, and I'll pretend I'm you, like this. This is your Hollywood radio reporter coming to you from the Little Theater at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios. Leo is on the air.
I couldn't do it. It would sound too ridiculous. Imagine me talking in your voice. I'm sorry.
Come on, just let go. You can do it. After I've read your introduction, you'll say, "Thank you, Mr. Whitbeck." And I'll say, "Ladies and gentlemen, you have no idea how Miss Temple has grown. She's several inches taller. She has lost that baby plumpness. She's really a very pretty young lady," it says here in the script. "And she has just completed the finest picture she has ever made, with Herbert Marshall, Gail Patrick, and Lorraine Day. It's called Kathleen, the name of the girl in the story, and it's about a problem child who really isn't a problem at all, but just a girl without a mother, whose father is too busy getting rich to pay any attention to her. And so, to make up for all the disappointments of her life, Kathleen pretends that things are just the way she would like to have them. How am I doing?"
You're doing all right. I haven't seen the picture, Kathleen, but I did read the script, and I remember you do a great deal of pretending.
Only when it is necessary.
How do you mean?
The sequence about the poem is a good example.
Poem?
In the story, I write a poem, especially for my father. It's sentimental and sort of sacred. I had hoped my father, that's Herbert Marshall, would understand, but he didn't. I worked hard to make it a good poem, trying to tell him just how I felt about everything. About him, especially. And when it was finished, I waited in my room for my father to call me downstairs to dinner. And I started thinking how I would read the poem to him. In a moment, there will be a knock on the door, I thought. And Jarvis, the butler, will say, "Miss Kathleen, your father wishes to see you in the living room." And I'll say, "Thank you, Jarvis." Then I'll pick up my poem, and then I'll hurry downstairs. And I'll go into the living room, and my father will be standing in front of the fireplace. Just at first, he won't see me. And for a minute, I'll stand there and look at him and think how good-looking he is and young and attractive. And then I'll say, "Hello, Father." Then he'll turn and see me and he'll say,
"Well, hello there."
Father, I must speak to you on a matter of importance to us both.
Very well, but be brief, Kathleen. My friends are waiting for me at the club as usual.
You have a friend waiting for you here.
Who?
I'm that friend.
Yes, of course, but you're still a child, you know.
I'm 12. In this dress, I could pass for 14.
Yes, that's true, but still.
Let me read the poem I wrote for you. It will make everything clear.
Very well, go ahead.
It's cold. My heart cries out. I don't ask for the moon above. I just ask for your love. You hardly know I'm alive. Yet to win your love, I always strive. You can hear the birds sing. You can hear the bells ring. So please don't be deaf and keep us apart. Listen to the cry of my heart.
Dearest, dearest Kathleen, this isn't only a great poem. It teaches me a great lesson. Darling, I've been blind.
Not really blind, Joseph.
Yes, blind. My own little girl, say you can forgive me. Put your arms around me and say you can forgive me.
We're both to blame.
No, no, the blame is mine. I was deaf to the cry of your heart, but I'm deaf no longer. Oh, when I realize what I've missed all these years, I can't hold you close enough.
Oh, it's so wonderful having you hug me.
Kathleen, from now on I'll be home for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day.
But you have to go to the office.
I'll close the office. Money means nothing to me now. You're all that matters.
Oh, Father, it's like a dream come true.
Surely that is a grand scene. Why did you say your father didn't understand? I think he displayed a fine sense of understanding.
Well, you see, that is just the way I dreamed it, not the way it really happened. No, when I went downstairs, he wasn't alone, the way I had hoped he would be. Miss Lorraine Bennett was there, Gilpatrick in real life. When I walked into the living room, my father said, sort of casually, "Oh, hello there." And I said, "Good evening, Father." And he said,
"My, what a pretty dress. Getting to be quite a lady of fashion, aren't you? Lorraine, this is Kathleen. Kathleen, say how do you do to Miss Lorraine Bennett."
"How do you do, Kathleen?"
"How do you do, Miss Bennett?"
"I'm a kind of sort of next-door neighbor of yours. I'm spending the summer at the inn. And when your daddy goes away to his old office, you and I must have some fun." "Why, what have we here? Not a poem."
"Oh, it's nothing."
"It is a poem. Johnny, listen, she has real talent. It's called My Heart Cries Out. I don't ask for the moon above. I just ask for your love."
"Captain, what on earth are you thinking about? That was very rude."
"Well, she had no business reading it. It's private."
"I think I know Kathleen's secret. I think she has a crush on someone. Did I guess it? Who is it, Clark Gable or Robert Taylor? Come on, fess up."
"You apologize to Miss Bennett and go to your room."
Now you can see how brutal reality can be. Of course, I don't expect the grown-ups to understand just what I mean. But all the people my own age will know exactly what I'm talking about. Fathers, and even mothers sometimes, forget that the rest of us are human beings, too. They sort of talk down to us, as if we were still babies. They don't understand how serious a simple thing like a poem can be. When they act that way, there's only one thing we can do to make things right. Just pretend everything is fine. Just dream we are important. like Kathleen does, after her father says he's going to marry Miss Bennett.
Miss Lorraine Bennett. Money. That's what she's after, I bet. If I had a lot of money, if I was in New York, if I just happened to be walking down a street in New York, just walking along there, and all of a sudden a man was to dash out of the theater. He says, "Every cent I have in the world is in this play, and now the leading lady has broken her leg." I stop, turn, go to him and say,
"I beg your pardon, I couldn't help overhearing you."
Oh, it's terrible, terrible. My show opens tonight, this very night. The theater will be packed, and I am at my very wit's end.
Well, maybe I can help you. I sing and dance a little.
But you're rather young. Did you ever have any experience?
Well, I sang and danced in a French play at school. Many people were kind enough to say I was the best.
Come with me.
I wish you'd come along, around the corner, the skies are blue, around the corner, where dreams come true, just leave your cares behind you, where they can't find you, and start life over anew. Corner, you'll find a song to always help you when things go wrong. And if you
keep pretending, you'll find a happy ending.
Around the corner from you.
Thank you for a swell job. And after this, I won't object to answering the questions. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Shirley Temple, Herbert Marshall, and Gail Patrick in several scenes from the motion picture, Kathleen. This is your Hollywood radio reporter saying thank you for listening.